Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. And it's a Monday evening, and Edwin is with me. Hi, Edwin, how are you going?
Show me the money, Martin. Show me the numbers and I will show you the money.
There's a lot of BS going around at the moment, isn't it, about what's going on with the markets, I have to say. You know, everybody's saying, oh, it's amazing, number of listings going through the roof, a lot of sales, a lot of forced sales. You know, ABC did a thing the other evening. I wonder what they're really looking at, because it's not showing in the data, really, is it?
Look, it is, Martin. This is the thing. Look, I'm no mathematician, right? I put it out there. I put it out on Twitter. I'm no mathematician and or an economist or a professor of economics. I don't get the big bucks. I really don't get the big bucks in that from that side of the fence. But the numbers just don't seem to add up as far as I'm concerned. Dusty asked all the scholars out there in X, it's no longer Twitter, but in X world, asked all the who's paying for the articles? That's what I'm saying, Martin. Show me the numbers, and I'll show you the money, or show me the money and I'll show you the numbers. I'll give you any numbers.
Yeah, very good. Well, it is pretty amazing what's going on, and CoreLogic graph that came out shows a little uptick, but of course it's an uptick from such a low level, right? And then they were hypothesizing around why it was that people were selling. Well, maybe they were suggesting that some property investors were actually selling. And then they went on to say that, it may well be that some of those property investors have decided to capitalize on their recent gains, quoting rises in Brisbane prices. But it seems to be quite a tenuous set of arguments, really. I'm not totally sure that we're getting the full story.
Well, and this is what you and I say. We've got to really split this whole thing up into what market, what area, what part of, is it a Sydney market? Is it what part of Sydney? What suburb? What part of the suburb? What street in the suburb? And what house on the street? Which side of the street does it does the property sit on? Does it sit on the on the side of Parramatta Council, or does it sit on the side of Ryde Council? Yeah, because one can be a real bitch when you want to get things done. I mean, this is the whole thing. But when you're just throwing percentages out there, as I keep on saying, percentages, as far as I'm concerned, don't really represent what's happening on the ground. Look, percentages are useful, I guess, but if you got two kids, right, and you've got, and one likes to eat Cocoa Pops in the morning, the other one likes to eat Weet-Bix, you could really say that 50% of the children in Australia like to eat Cocoa Pops, and the other 50% like to eat Weet-Bix, right? Because it's a percentage. But show me the pool, show me the data, show me the numbers, show me the where it actually is, and then we can start talking about what's happening in that particular market. That's why I try to stick as much as I can with our numbers, with our stories, as what's happening in Sydney, what parts of Sydney, in order for people to understand. We do gravitate a little bit towards Melbourne because you've got your contacts in Melbourne and I've got other contacts in Melbourne, but not to the extent that what I used to have down in Melbourne when I was doing business in Melbourne or in Queensland for that matter. Yeah, we could take certain things. But when you start throwing stuff out there and you've got professors of economics and renowned professors of economics, and reporters quoting those professors, I go back to what we started the podcast with, or the show with, Martin. That is, show me the money. Show me the money. Who's paying for these articles? And then this is just my thoughts, my theories. I'm just alleging this. I'm not saying true. But I started reading more REA articles after that over the weekend, and there was a lot of stuff there was a lot of stuff to do with Ray White. So I don't know whether, whether they're throwing the big bucks at these economists, at the REA economists and so forth. But maybe you could reach out to your old sweetheart that used to work there at REA Martin, Nerida. She may be able to clarify things.
Well, yeah, I think she chose not to come back on the show, having broken, unfortunately, a story that she probably didn't want to break on DFA initially. But it is an interesting time. But as you say, Louis Christopher has some very, relatively reliable data on trend. And if you look at Louis's numbers, you get a bit of a different story, don't you?
Look, you do, and this is what I put out. And over the weekend, I was just putting things out, and because the story that we were going to talk a little bit more on later on was getting a lot of traction over the weekend, particularly in the way that I formatted the tweet, and I was asking the questions, right? And then I started chatting with Louis, on the DMs and talking about it and grabbing his figures. Look, best case scenario. Based on Louis' numbers, because they were very specific. The article was very specific to do with a specific, year-on-year trend. So it wasn't, they weren't convoluting dates or months. They were pretty much, on the same week last year. And looking at Louis' numbers, apart from the ones that we share on the show. And even Louis' numbers only, if anything, they only reflected at best a 2% uptick, but not the 160% that they were talking about. We'll break that article up a little bit more later on as to what they said. And but it's again, it wasn't just a property commentator like myself that was saying it wasn't just a would-be publication in that sense, but it was quoting a professor, a renowned professor of economics with I believe David Taylor put out. She's got a degree in some sort of mathematics to do with data. But look, it's out there. I just don't see it. I'm not seeing it. I sort of started looking at the reading into the article and perhaps reading between the lines a little bit more. And I'll say, are they really trying to scare the market into selling? And if that's the case, well, Tom Panos's and Mark Boris's scare tactics of trying to get people to sell at whatever means. Otherwise, you're going to miss out on the gravy train, blah blah blah, this and that and the other. I think, look, there's a bigger argument, or there's a bigger boogeyman on the other side of Tom or Mark or REA articles, and the bigger boogeyman on the other side of the argument is, where the hell do you go? Where do you relocate your family? Because a lot of the families, a lot of the people, a lot of the retirees want to stay in the area that they've spent 20, 30, 40, 50 years in, and there's nothing for them. David Taylor from the ABC, under his personal post, he saw a quick tweet that he put out. I think it was yesterday or early this morning. It's not that we need tens of thousands, we need hundreds of thousands to be built quick, smart, in order to accommodate the growing population, the growth in the population. More, I guess, more to the point, he was saying it without saying it, is the is this this dreadful immigration policy that we're currently on there. I mean, it seems like the main publications, the architects of the conundrum that we're in, being the politicians, don't want to talk about it, and they want to talk about the biggest elephant in the room. It's a dinosaur in the room. It's no longer an elephant, but it's a dinosaur, and that is the immigration policy. And we're bringing more people in. We're not building. There was a report by I didn't send you the article. I put it up on the tweet. I think it was on Saturday, where 50% of Friday, sorry, 50% of building companies are trading insolvent, and these are the major companies. 50% of the major building companies, that's from home builders to high-rise development to medium density, are actually trading insolvent, Martin. That is scary shit. That is if you're a tradesperson, you'd be weary, because a lot of the tradespeople are these unfortunate bastards that are, yeah, the traders out there that are in contractors, they are working not on 30-day accounts, not even on 60-day accounts. The majority of them are working on 120. And now if they want a contract with some building companies, they're being asked to wait 150 days for their invoice to be paid. I mean, this is we're just walking into a major, major catastrophe. And then we got the fiasco down Melbourne of Chairman Dan and the gang, putting a stop to any new construction post 2024, not being plugged to gas. Think what you may about gas or not, but that's going to put an upward tick on the cost of building and construction. And then they obviously haven't thought about the ethnic communities that would gravitate towards homes with natural gas connections and gas cooking and the like. So it's going to be a wait and see as to see what happens down there, obviously, with that policy. But if anything, the policies that have been brought out are being more disruptive and destructive than constructive and giving the people a horizon or a sunrise to look forward to.
Absolutely. Well, it's just very concerning what's going on. And of course, with the high migration putting demand on, interest rates continue to rise, of course, and more people coming off the mortgage cliff. So a lot of uncertainty there. But of course, the real estate sector are pumping the stories to try and get more people to transact. And as we keep coming back to this fundamental principle, real estate agents need transactions. Without transactions, they have nowhere to go. And so that's the bottom line. They're trying to encourage people to transact.
Look, and again, we are back to 2019. Remember in 2019 and even before 2019, I was sharing about the fact that there were real estate agents in the eastern suburbs and in the lower North Shore. There's other in other areas, but just so that our followers can understand what was really happening to the real estate industry, it was on its knees and it was buckling because there were very, very low transactions. And there were real estate agents picking up listings and doing them, taking on the listings just with what we call the VPA, the vendor paid advertising, in order to have a signboard posted on in the local area, so that they will be seen as having a listing, because without a signboard you lose territory to your competitors. So they were picking up listings, just with the VPA. Just so have the sign, and that's how much pain they were in. So we are back to 2019. When back in 2019, I was saying that 20 to 30% of officers or real estate agents were going to leave the industry. But again, in many other industries, the same thing happened. But for the pandemic, is what saved them and what gave them a stay alive, a fresh breath of life until now, and we are back to where we were. It's deja vu 2019, but I don't think there's a lifeline out there, and there's a lot of people that are leaving the industry, a lot of mates, a lot of old contacts I had are no longer operating. They're either or just working casual or part-time or doing something else or doing both, being a real estate agent as well as being an Uber driver. And today, I think I had about three or four phone calls from different agents just to let me know where they're now, what they're doing. But if I do, anybody that's interested in selling, let them know and send them their way. I mean, these are from people that you haven't heard of for a year or two, and now all of a sudden they want to take you out for a coffee. Hey, I'm in for a good coffee, as long as it's black with a teaspoon of honey.
Absolutely. Well, it is quite interesting. And then what about the WeChat chatters? Because they're still quite active, aren't they? And there's some interesting stories going on there.
Look, the interesting thing is about WeChat Chatter is they're actually somewhat happy about Chairman Zhang's decision, right? Because these are the people that have been buying. These are the investment groups that talk about what's happening, and obviously that was it wasn't just the WeChat Chatters, but it was a lot of banter on various platforms with regard to the decision that that the Victorians took, and that's somewhat, the majority of them were very happy. We're elated because what they were saying is that their investment properties that have gas connections are going to be worth more, and they're going to get more rent for them because there are a lot of ethnic communities that are in the rental market, and there are also a lot of ethnic communities that are buying that will pay that bit more for something that has a gas connection because of the lifestyle in terms of the diet and the way they cook things, right? So they go, they're happy. Either way, they're happy. Stay away from new projects. But the question that I posted out myself, and I got Dusty to put on the WeChat groups is, well, I mean, who really wants to buy an off the plan house or a house and land package now, or buy an off the plan apartment, or even into a medium density townhouse or villa development, when 50% of the building companies, major and mid-tier building companies, are trading insolvent. I mean, it's who knows whether the project's going to be it's going to be finished. And all the other question is how are the projects going to be finished, and at what standard, and what shortcuts are going to be taken? Because you and I, Martin, been talking about the shortcuts that the cost in construction were, it was all going to lead to, and hey, the chickens are coming home to roost in many areas. I'll give you one. I won't disclose the area. Bob the Builder, rang me up over the weekend, and he said, "Mate, this whole fiasco with the building companies, it's even worse." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Look, there is a public contract, and Bob the Builder was working for the company that sent in a tender for a public contract, a big contract, a big contract, and that he said they went in so they can get the tender, they can win the tender. They went in at a 4% profit margin, right? Which is you're on a knife's edge, right? You're an absolute knife's edge. You basically make an allowance of 5% for stuff ups along the way. So you're even below that threshold, right? They didn't get the tender, Martin. And he said they didn't, and he said the company that did win the tender for this government project, New South Wales government project contract, they came in with a 1% profit margin in order to get the tender. So how do you like them apples?
Yeah, talk about a profitless boom, and of course there's no wiggle room there, right? No fat to trim later. So the only thing that they can do is to build less well, build cheaper, using cheaper labor or cheaper materials. That's the only thing. Oh.
Going to move you a bit. I'm moving a little bit. I'm sinking. No, I've just got my Evan's just mucking around with my power cord and disconnected, and I'm on my battery was low. Anyway,
Are you right?
I am renting this space for the elevators.
That's right. That's because it's cold out there. Well, you're still with me at the moment. That's good. Now, here's a interesting question. What on earth is this about?
Okay, this is what we've been talking about, the perils of self-managed properties, right? The perils of self-managed properties and or badly managed properties, and what tenants have to put up with, the crap that they have to put up with from both landlords as well as cheapskate property managers that don't give a rat's. So this poor family got told that obviously that they want to stay in a home, the lease is up, they're on a month by month, And the landlord said, "Well, help me clean up the help me clean up backyard, chop down the trees, and obviously, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I'll let you stay longer. I'll continue on with the lease. Blah, blah, blah." So he's basically hoodwinked the tenants into getting rid of some palm trees and some other banana trees around in the backyard. And now they've got a whole pile of rubbish, green waste in the backyard. And it's been like that, not 1 week, not 2 weeks, but it's been like that for 2 months. The landlord won't provide a skip in, or he won't assist them with moving. He's expecting the tenants to cut all that rubbish and put it in the green waste on a week by every other week, because the green waste is collected every other week in that area, and slowly to diminish that whole pile. So this is what happens. This is where the rental squeeze is really taking us, Martin. It's really taking us to for you know to where we're going to end up with a lot of badly managed properties, if they are managed by cheapskate property managers. And if they're self-managed, this is what tenants are having to put up with, because of they've got no choice. In a lot of cases, they've got no choice. I mean, there was another article in one of the publications that I didn't send you, where this poor bastard in the northwest region of Sydney was pretty much living next to a polluted waterway that he can't drink the water because the sewer line's going into that tributary, a busted, and the sewer lines are basically discharging the waste from other homes around, and he's copping it all, but he can't drink the water, but he has to take a shower nonetheless. He has to wash himself, right? But he's literally washing himself in human feces.
Absolutely right. Well, if you want to go swimming, watch where you swim. That's true also by way of beaches as well, particularly after rain. We've had massive issues here in the UK with lots of rain and lots of water companies throwing sewage directly into the beaches around our coastline here, and everyone's up in arms about that. But the real point that you're getting to here, Edwin, is really interesting. The idea of self managing an investment property, right? Self-managing an investment property. That's a big, big deal. And a lot of people who have been under the gun are beginning to say, well, maybe I should try and manage it myself. But of course, there's a massive amount of regulation. There's a massive amount of stuff you have to do. And it's nowhere near as simple as you may think. And of course, many property investors wouldn't have the right insurances and things to be able to do self-management. So it's a slippery slope, isn't it?
Look, it is, and there's a video that I've sent you as well to for the viewers to have a look at, and this is in a home in the Blacktown LGA that I went to inspect, and I happened to have a chat with the tenant, and this is again I don't think I asked him how long it's been that sewer line's been busted on the actual video that I sent you. There's a bit of a conversation that I did have, but I did ask him, and it had been like that since he moved into the property, which was over a year ago. I mean, this is a sewer line. This is the old, so they've renovated a bathroom, and whoever's renovated the bathroom is basically connected to the old clay pipes there. In the back of the house, well, one of the bathrooms in the back of the house, and discharging all the sewer going down into the, but they've busted the clay pipe up the top, and all the gunk that all that water waste that's coming out. I mean, it's putrid, it stinks. But the tenants are fearful of. They've talked to the WeChat property manager, cheap WeChat property manager. They've talked to her. They've tried to get the landlord to fix it, and won't fix it. But look, it's going to come to a point where one or the whole fa one member of the family, or the entire family, are going to end up getting very, very sick because they are literally living on on the sewer, and it stinks when you're walking down the side of the house. It really stinks. And when our viewers see the video, they'll get an idea of how bad that is based on the and it hadn't rained, by the way. That's not rainwater there. That is all the stuff coming out of the from the laundry, from the bathrooms, all the from the sewer lines up at the top end of the house.
Yeah, it's very, very, very concerning. And of course, as you say, not just a bit of a stink, but it can create a whole amount of issues with terms of health and things like that. Not good. But I think we're going to see a lot more of this because more investors are just don't have the money to do the repairs. And if they decide to self-manage, it's going to get worse. And I keep making the point, Edwin, it amazes me how when you see an investment property coming on the market, how often there are major things that need to be done to the property before it really is, up to an acceptable standard. So many investment properties are below standard at the moment.
That's right, and this is why we've been talking about the showroom specials that are out there, right? That a lot of agents are picking up on and getting stuff done real quick, surface stuff in order to cover up a lot of the crap that's underneath as well. And unfortunately, the desperation of some of the first time buyers, because of the fear of missing out. And because there's not enough listings on the market presently, they're buying these, and they're really buying properties that, look, I get that you're going to be buying a property. You're always going to have that extra bit of cash on the side in order to get things done, but not when it totals. Let's say you're buying a property for $1 million, and then you end up having to rectify what you thought was renovated, and having to re And that's why you paid the $1 million. Otherwise, you would have only paid 875, let's say. You've stretched yourself to the million because you like the property, and you got overwhelmed by the flashy bench tops, and you paid $1 million to outbid everybody else, only to then have to redo all that you paid the extra for. And it's going to cost you even more because it's going to be a lot more painful because now you're living in it, and you have to do the renovations, and then undertake the renovations whilst you're living in it. And I don't recommend that to anybody.
Absolutely right. Well, let's just come back to this article that we were talking about earlier on with regard to who is paying for all this spruiking about the advertising. It really is very interesting, right? There is an agenda here, isn't there?
Look, it is, and this is the thing. Like, it comes out, and look, the interesting thing is, though, there are other people, other commentators on the social media platforms that picked up with it and ran with it, right? Again, I ask, what's their agenda as well? To some of our clients that did reach out and said, "Hey, what do you think about this article?" I said, "Well, look at the numbers. Look at the numbers in your local area that we're looking at, and you tell me. You be the judge, because they're not. It's I just don't see it. That we're very specific about Sydney. Sydney records massive spiking home auction numbers. Really? Sydney's recording a massive spike in auction in auctions across the city, potentially showing first signs of distressed sales. Yeah, I get a lot of there's a lot of Twitter posts, and there's a lot of funny shit going on Twitter or X, and people posting all sorts of stuff. But when you look at the back end, you realize that there are a lot more people making money out of flipping homes because of the shortage of stock on markets, and then anybody losing. And the ones that are tied up to mortgagee possessions, as you and I said, Martin, they're tied up with commercial. There's a commercial side to it, and if it is a residential home, it typically goes back to being a development site that's gone pear-shaped, And as we pointed out in our previous rants, and that is that if you're a developer and you're looking for construction funding from the bank, well, you know, unless you've got a clean bill of health, you can whistle Dixie that the bank's going to lend you the money at a cheap rate. So, you know, all those things come into play, and of course, people are going to fall over because they can no longer build for what they thought they could. So all that adds up. But when you start talking silly numbers, you know, in the second page, it says there are 672 auctions scheduled in Sydney. Yeah. Okay. Nothing wrong with that. In this week, up 70% year on year. And I went back to our numbers, and we're close to that. Even Louis's numbers only showed a 2% uptick. But then they don't stop there, right? Because so they didn't just get a bit of money; they must have got a lot of money. Yeah. And says in 695 auctions scheduled next week, up 160% year on year. Prop track economist and Flaherty said. I mean, I just fell over backwards. Dusty had to resuscitate me with a shot of tequila because I was, yeah, she reckons I was out for about 5 minutes. But the thing is, even the numbers on that, if you just look purely at those numbers, it really doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, something's got, is it a typo? But up to date, it hasn't been fixed. It hasn't been changed. This is a screenshot from today, which came out on that I got on Saturday. So nothing's been updated. So yeah, but then again, who's to know, right? So then, in the last one, there it says there are more than double the number of auctions across Sydney next week compared to the same time last year. I don't know where they're getting the numbers from. Property Track has had a bit of a hiccup. There's a bit of a glitch. I know we've got a lot of IT experts that watch our show. I recommend that they, if they want a gig, if they want a part-time gig, if they want to get a bit of side income, I reckon they should contact Property Track and offer their services, because I'm sure that a lot of our followers are IT experts, they're engineers, and I'm sure they could fix that bug in their system.
Yeah, well, maybe there's just an extra zero snuck in somewhere. I don't know. It just, I couldn't make head and a tail of them. But as you say, it got picked up and amplified through the social media, and nobody apart from yourself was asking the fundamental question. Hang on a moment. Do these numbers make any sense? And the answer is no.
So then, look, as I said earlier on, then I started looking at some other articles on REA that this reporter had written, and I don't know, Martin. I'm just putting it out there. I'm just putting it out there. I'm not accusing. I'm just putting it out there. There was a lot of Ray White in the other articles. I don't know, but then Martin, Ray White keeps on popping up. Because, you know, the next segment is making news, and we make the news. And I'm just going to say to you, Martin, mark the day, July the 28th. Mark it down in your diary, Martin, because that is the day that the mortgage cliff started. As far as I'm concerned, I'm calling it Tom's Day.
Well, this is interesting, right? So, Tom in front of what? A good number of Ray White agents, a training day. That triggered it.
Tom put out a tweet, right? And he says that today I have been informed. On Tuesday, I presented a fantastical prospecting to the Ray White group. Ray White pops out again. I don't know. Yeah, it's. I know there's something about that name. And he writes, today I have been informed the group did 13,000 calls that resulted in 8,000 appraisals being made. So this is it. We're doomed. Anybody that hasn't sold, you're a cactus, according to this, because theoretically, there's a lot of boasting on other platforms that Ray White and the agents, they will convert 70%, and I mean, under Tom's guidance, they will convert 70 to 80% of their listings. So do the math on that, Martin. What's 70% of 8,000? So there you go. That's basically put doubled the amount of home listings on market in Sydney. So keep an eye on the numbers. Keep a close eye on the numbers. And in the future, when you've got your grandchild sitting on your knee and they're saying, "Grandpa, Grandma, when did the 2023 mortgage cliff start?" You can go back. It started in Tom's day, sweetheart. Started Tom's day, July the 28th.
Yeah, mark your diary. That's when it happened. Indeed. Well, let's go on and look at the numbers, because I guess we should see what the what the evidence actually is. And well, there isn't a huge amount to say really in terms of the numbers, is there?
Look, there isn't. I must say, look, we just got to take it week by week, right? And this is what I say to friends, relatives, clients, just take it week by week. Yes, we are coming into spring. There's a lot of calling out there. There's a lot of push for people to list, but at the moment, they're just not there. Needless to say, and I'm not saying that. An opportunity may arise for you to get a property that has a great potential and a huge upside, which is what you look for if you have to buy and if you want to buy and you need to buy, right? I'm not saying don't buy. I'm just saying just be very, very wary, particularly who you go against. So yeah, look, the numbers, there is a bit of an uptick from last week's numbers of 15,153. Now we've got 15,401. Based on our Monday charts, Monday figures. But when you compare those numbers to 2022, we're way behind. We're way behind. And there's a lot more, as I said before, there's a lot more demand, and less supply than last year, and a lot more demand than last year. And we got more people arriving. So, fingers crossed that we do get a big uptick in numbers. But until people can decide where are they going to go, where are they going to move to, it's a decision that's going to, I don't think it's going to materialize. The mortgage cliff, the whatever you want to call it. It's not gonna unravel very quickly if we get to see one whilst there's no choice.
Absolutely. And just to round the score again, August 2022, you can see there the numbers were a lot different. So, 170% higher than last year? Don't think so. Let's go on to Melbourne. So here, 22,599 on the 31st of July, compared with 24th on the 24th, it was 22,406. So, little bit of an uptick, but again, not huge.
No, and the question's now going to be is what, these new policies, how is that going to play out in Melbourne? Right? Because as much as look, we jest about things, we talk about things, but at the end of the day, if I was working in Melbourne, I'd be very, very interested to see, where the homes are being built, what type of demographic are living there, who's moving to those new developments, because and it's going to be a shift. As I said, there's a lot of communities that prefer to cook with natural gas than they do with electricity, and Dusty had a good thought, and she's reaching out to the WeChat chatterers over in China, and she's saying if there's a manufacturer in China that could manufacture flat-based woks.
Oh yeah, new business opportunity. I like it. I like it.
You gotta hustle, right? 2023 is the year of the hustle, right? So
Absolutely right.
she's hustling. You know, you have flat what? That could be the go. That could be the
Absolutely.
go, Martin.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's just briefly look at the auction numbers because, again, don't really tell you very much, do they?
No, there's just no. I don't see the confidence and the enthusiasm that other people are seeing. All I can see is, a big sign. Be cautious when you step into the when you step into that arena. Be very, very cautious when you step into that arena because you could be paying 10, 15, 20% above the odds, and you could all and not only that, but it could be costing you another 10, 15% when you start doing the rectification work that because you rushed into a purchase, you didn't do, and you didn't do your due diligence, and you got caught out with a bigger lemon just because the reports that the agent gave you told you that everything was hunky dory. That's what that tells me. Just be careful, be wary. Tread carefully.
Yeah, bigger lemons. Lots of those around. Be careful, be cautious. And we're not saying don't buy, but do your homework and make sure you know what you're actually buying. And then on the rental side, well, interestingly, on the 24th, and this is Sydney Rentals, 11,783. And if you look then at the following week, 11,344. So a bit of a drop in terms of the rental properties that are around at the moment, which I guess is no real surprise given the pressure on the markets. But the numbers aren't massively different.
No, on the 31st, it's actually 11,347. And that's today's figures, right? The ones that you've got up there on the screen are the figures that I sent you with regards to 2022. It's interesting for our viewers to see the fact that, there's only what, three property different from same day last year to in today. And yet there are a lot more people. So this is the stress that we're not out of the danger zone with the rental market, right? There's a lot of pain out there, and unfortunately that is translating to bad management practices, self-managed properties that are going to create major problems down the track for the regulators, and there's going to be a lot of litigation. So that's what these numbers tell me is litigation over the next 6, 12, 18 months.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of concerns. And it's interesting, I've had four or five conversations over the last couple of weeks with my one-to-one series. And four of them were actually property investors trying to work out how to save money on managing their property investment because they're not getting enough cash flow coming in. They can't put the rent up anymore. They've got these pressures with regard to the mortgage payments going up. And so the obvious thing is, well, maybe I should manage it myself. And then as soon as you go down that route, then you've got a whole bunch of questions that come up about, do you understand the implications of that? Do you understand all the legal obligations? Do you understand all the other things you have to do? And sorry, the dog's making a bit of a noise. She thinks it's time for lunch, so she's come to give me a nudge. It's only 10 o'clock. It's early in the morning. But they're keen. They're very keen. Anyway, the point there is property investors looking to try and cut corners where they can. And unfortunately, of course, that's going to put a lot of pressure on them as well as on renters.
Look, I tell you, next time you talk to those in those one-on-ones that you do, and you're talking to investors, Martin, you can give them this tip: how to save money. It's not necessarily by getting rid of your property manager or by self-managing. You can save a hell of a lot of money if you do preventative maintenance to your property. Right? If you do preventative maintenance to your property, you will save tens of thousands, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Preventative maintenance is one of the things that, when I was running the rent rolls, is what we used to get our landlords to do, because you catch something and you deal with it before it becomes a bigger issue down the track, or before it becomes a health issue, then you end up in the tribunal. And preventative maintenance is key. If you're in a strata lot, get rid of your shitty fans that the apartments come with, regardless of whether it's a new apartment that's a brand spanking new. Get rid of it, change it, upgrade them to the next level, because everything that's comes under the NCC, it's just the basics, right, to pass the NCC. But so it's there's a lot of things that people can do under preventative maintenance, and that'll save them a hell of a lot more than trying to self-manage a property and save $27 on a weekly basis. That can be a tax deduction anyway.
Absolutely. And we had that discussion a bit last week, right, about the idea of walking around occasionally, just having a look at the property. And that's true whether it's your owner or whether you're an investor. And if it's worth going around and just kicking the tires and having a little bit of a look, because, as you say, preventative maintenance is the way to go, because a small problem becomes a really big problem unless you tackle it. And actually, interestingly, of course, if you've got an investment property and you've not had a look at it, and you don't know whether your property manager's doing an inspection, that's where the problems start, because little problems grow into big ones.
Exactly. And I've seen so many bullshit property management reports, and especially now, people just go in there, property managers that I know personally, unfortunately, they go in there and they just snap away, walk past the bedroom, take a photo, walk past the next bedroom, take a photo, go to the bathroom, take a photo, this, and then they just do a quick report. They're really not trained. They're really not trained to do proper checks, see if there's leaks under the kitchen sink, see if there's anything's leaking. Preventative maintenance is the key to saving, as I said, thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars in a property.
Absolutely. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, that wasn't actually our tip for the week, although it could have been. You've got another one as well, so a double bonus episode.
Yeah, double whammy. Yeah, look, just enjoy life. You and I spoke, we're speaking about it at the beginning of the show. Enjoy life. I've been talking to other people today about just enjoying life. And the reason why I bring out this tip, I guess, is a lot of the tips are basically things that are happening to me over the week or that. So this week, I was meant to see, I'm still seeing a regular specialist that I see every year. And the doc is finally retired. This is a doc that's been with me from when I was 30. And when he first diagnosed me of being terminally ill back then. So, and I asked the doc, look, doc, there's two, myself and another fellow that he was treating had this condition at that time. I don't know how many people have got the condition now, but at that time, he said, "There's only Mr. Almeida, there's only you and one other fellow." And I said, "Look, there's only two questions that I need to ask you, right? The first one is where's the other fellow? Because I want to compare notes, right?" He goes, it's one of those things. He's no longer with us." He said, "What, no longer in Sydney?" No, he's no longer with us." I said, "Okay, got it." And then I said, "Well, what about?" And he goes, "And what's the second question you want to ask me?" I said, "Well, Doc, what do we need to do in order to stay alive?" And he just said, "Fight, fight, and enjoy life."
Yeah.
And he helped me a lot, helped me to fight, helped me to enjoy. I mean, there was a lot of changes that had to happen in my life, my diet, physically, and so forth. And you know, I'm still here when at that time I had 6 weeks or 6 months. So yeah, look, enjoy life. Life's too short not to enjoy it. And I've been sharing that with a lovely mother and son over in the north, in the north part of Sydney today as well. Just keep on enjoying life and just seeing mum, as I call her, just smiling away, 86 years old, and sharp as a tack, smiling and just listening to her stories and how much she enjoyed life and it's I don't think that speaks a lot more than how many investment properties we can have, how much money we can have. What's the point of it all if we can't enjoy life?
Yeah, very good advice, Edwin. And interestingly, I again in my one-on-one conversations, it's quite interesting how often we sort of sidle off into some of these more philosophical areas, and quite a few people just feel they're on a treadmill. The treadmill is to basically earn money to be able to go to work, to be able to buy a house, to be able to go to work, to be able to earn money, to be it's like going round and round and round. And sometimes I sort of pose the question about, well, actually, what is life really for at the end of the day, right? If it's only about that treadmill, I think there's something really, really wrong with the values and what's important. And so, to my mind, this idea of, life, you only get you to play your life once. So, capitalize and make the best of it that you can. And there's more to life than just how many investment properties you've got and what your net yield return is.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it. You just, and if you're not enjoying it, what are you doing it for? Do something you enjoy.
It's a pretty good question. Oh, that's a very philosophical end to our show today, Edwin. And you'll see that we've got the studio pretty much working. I'm just trying to learn the new buttons now, but it's sort of working, so that's good. And we'll be able to do it all again next week. And have a good week meantime.
Likewise, Martin, all the best and enjoy the rest of your week.
See ya. Take care. Bye-bye.